Welcome to The Appetite, a podcast brought to you by Opal Food and Body Wisdom, an eating disorder treatment clinic in Seattle, Washington. On this podcast, we talk about all things food, body, movement, and mental health. I'm Dr. Lexi Giblin, your host for today, and I'm here with Kara Bozzi, Opal Clinical Director and co-founder.
Hi, Lexi.
Hi. And we are joined today by Mero and Cosette, who will be doing self-inquiry on this episode in a bit. Hello, Mero and Cosette.
Hi, I'm Mero. I'm so happy to be here with you today.
Hi, I'm Cosette. Thanks for having us here.
So in this self-inquiry series, we conduct an Opal self-inquiry group on the podcast. So you will learn just a little bit about the self-inquiry process and hopefully find some resonance and inspiration in the difficult questions that are posed that you can take into your own self-inquiry work. If you are new to self-inquiry, would like a refresher, or would like to cajole yourself into the self-inquiry mode, listen to my short self-inquiry overview episode. Before we hear from Mero and Cosette, let me throw out a few reminders. So self-inquiry is a core mindfulness skill in Radically Open Dialectical Behavioral Therapy, or RODBT, which was founded by Dr. Tom Lynch. And in self-inquiry, we're choosing to go towards unwanted emotions or distress in order to learn and grow. So in RODBT, the self-inquiry process is intentionally short at about 3 to 5 minutes. And you can do self-inquiry in your head, in a journal, or verbally with someone else. When you go into self-inquiry, you are assuming you have blind spots and you are getting curious about what you do not yet understand. We can't see what we can't see is a quote we go back to in our self-inquiry work. So we are searching for the unexpected and looking out for old stories or patterned old routine ways we have of making sense of our experiences. And we're working to find good questions, not answers. So you're going to hear us asking questions, but you will not hear answers unless we're asking for clarifying questions. Good questions are questions that cause dysregulation or elicit discomfort of some sort. It could be a physical tension. But those questions that are uncomfortable to consider are the keepers. And so let me just quickly break down the self-inquiry process into 3 steps. The first step is where you feel. You identify a specific time when you experience an unwanted emotion. And we'll get to hear from Mero and Cosette about a little bit about their context, what was happening surrounding the unwanted emotion. And this is where you feel and take yourself back into the emotional experience. And then while feeling, you get curious and ask, what is the learning here? And then finally, you ask, what is a good question to get you back to this learning in the future? So kind of what question do you not want to ask? What question is difficult to consider? And in this series, we double down on the power of independent self-inquiry by positioning the work in a group context on the air. So where multiple viewpoints come to play, right? So in when you do journal self-inquiry work, it's you and you, right? And in this process, we have 4 different people in the room who are bringing their own viewpoints, which can help elicit parts of a person's self that they can't see, right? We're offering more possibilities by having more people involved. Our group process around the journal work is extra heat on. And so Cosette and Mero know that they can at any point choose to end the process if it's too much. So we want this to be helpful, obviously. The tricky thing is with self-inquiry is that helpful is also uncomfortable. So it's like finding that line of when it's gone, you know, when you feel like maybe you've pushed too hard. We will write down the questions you're receiving so that you can have them for later and focus on how it feels to consider the questions being posed. So we'll be curious about the questions, how our questions are landing for you, whether they're dysregulating or not. And if they're not, then we might want to try a different idea to see if that jogs some new learning for you. So we're serving, those of us not doing the self-inquiry, we're serving as provocateurs. And it's like full license to ask asshole questions. So we'll be working to not validate or soothe the person doing the self-inquiry, as we don't want to get in the way of the learning that comes with dysregulation. So we're going to kind of let you be in whatever emotion you are in hopes that that can bring you some learning. So Mero and Cosette have just done 5 minutes of journal self-inquiry work just prior to the recording of this episode. And now we'll add to this work by entering a group process. And any identifying information of the self-inquirers has been removed from the recording. Cosette, will you take us into your self-inquiry work?
Yeah, absolutely. So a few weeks ago, I was looking in a mirror, and I had this vivid experience of noticing my body in the mirror, noticing all of the imperfections, and this wave of emotions kind of flooding over me. And those emotions, unwanted emotions, were fear and frustration, some anger, some sadness, and then all of that comes with some underlying shame of my body. And this moved me into an urgency to restrict and to move deeper into eating disorder behaviors, which as a person seeking recovery and active eating disorder treatment runs really counter to my goals. And then also going into like feeling like a bad person because I have access to treatment and help, and I've had access to treatment and help for a while, unlike so many other people. And I'm still feeling this way. Like, this is still happening for me. And so a few questions that I came up with were just basically like, how does my eating disorder function in my life? What does it do? How do I find things that can replace it in a helpful way? Am I willing to give up the functions of my eating disorder to gain recovery, even though I don't know what that would necessarily look like? Why am I more concerned with my outward appearance than my inner well-being? Also, like I, as a person, I don't feel this way about other people. I don't look at people and like judge their bodies specifically. And so what makes me so special that I should judge myself? Why am I like the, so special? And then also, like, do I actually believe that I can get to a state of not hating my body? Do I believe that that's actually possible? Yeah, so that's my self-inquiry.
Sounds like you came up with a lot of good questions on your own. As a clarifying question, are there any of those particulars that you had the most dysregulation around with your questions that you came up with?
I think that some of the questions that really hit for me were, like, what makes me so special? Just that basic one. And then also, I feeling like a bad person because I've been in treatment and this still hasn't. Like, I'm still hanging on to things. So why am I hanging on to this? Do I actually want this?
Okay, that's helpful because I was wondering which place we should dive into, or whether we should dive into the feelings around urges to restrict or the feeling bad about having access to treatment and continuing to struggle. So questions from us.
Do you find shame to be familiar and comforting in some ways?
I have a quick answer for that.
What does that mean, Lexi, when there's a quick answer?
Am I assuming correctly that the quick answer is yes, that shame is comforting in some ways?
It's familiar.
Familiar, yeah. And so if you didn't answer that, what happens? So in self-inquiry, we just let it kind of sit there without answering it.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes it a little bit more dysregulating to not be able to answer or to clarify to like the nth degree of exactly what I mean.
That to me is really interesting and powerful. It's like the desire to explain yourself as like part of that shame. We wonder, do you want to be known and seen? Or do you want to perform?
Is that dysregulating?
Yeah. I think it also, for me, it goes into like worthiness of like, do I deserve to be known and seen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my question was around this special piece and something around like, what if it's okay to be special? Or something around, like you're describing shame around the specialness. What if you owned that you're special? What if you embraced being special?
I'm feeling a desire to clarify.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Is there a clarifying question? Is that what's... Yeah, you can clarify. Let's see where it takes us.
Okay. I think that the part about being special, and I'm using air quotes, is kind of to explain it a little bit further. It's more about like why am I allowed to judge my body and to restrict and do all of these things when I don't see another person and judge them the same way that I'm judging myself? So like, why am I the outlier from that group? I don't know if that...
Well, and I'm just wondering, I guess, if being like... taking that further of just being an outlier.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'm not, maybe not so much specific about the experience of looking at yourself and you're judging your body, but being the outlier. Like, I just wonder if there's something in the experience of being special or something where you're a difference. I'm struggling to get there, but I don't know if Lexi, any...
I think I'm curious is that line of thinking at all bringing dysregulation up for you?
Absolutely.
Okay. So Kara's hitting on something for you. Okay.
Yeah, there's like something about the judgment of you're judging that you are seeing yourself differently than you'd see others. And I guess what's the other side? That feels like the more familiar story. So if that was accepted or embraced even... And again, I'm thinking about it more largely than seeing yourself in a mirror.
Yeah, like sort of what's wrong with being...
Special.
Different. Yeah. What's wrong with you experiencing yourself differently than you do others?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like what? That seems like part of being human.
Or what if everyone feels this way and I'm not special? What would that be like?
Mm-hmm. What if everyone feels this way and you're not special?
Do I have a secret desire to be special or to see myself as differently from other people?
Or what if you're special and so is everybody else? Does it take away from your specialness?
I like this concept of like being terminally unique, where you believe you can't be understood. I wonder, do you believe you can't be understood because you believe your experience is so unique? Do you keep yourself isolated with this belief system? I also think there's this pull, especially for folks who are like politically aware, to silence any judgments they might have about other people's bodies. I wonder if it's true that you don't have any judgments about others' bodies or if maybe they're lurking somewhere deeper down. And what does it mean about you to judge other people's bodies? Why is that something so firmly you believe you don't do?
Is that dysregulating, Cosette?
Yeah, I think that goes into, like, the challenging internalized fat phobia and all of the things that I need to work on.
Okay, well, that was quite a bit of heat on. Cosette, are there any other questions before we move to Marrow?
Yeah.
Are you willing to hear another question, Cosette?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks for your willingness. I really appreciate that. What if your eating disorder doesn't have anything to do with your body? What if that's a symptom? Okay, that's it.
For listeners, the nonverbal response to Marrow's question communicated some discomfort with that question.
Is that what that communicated?
Yes.
Right. So Cosette was rolling her eyes. So sounds like, no, you received multiple questions there. Is there one that's particularly difficult?
I don't know if there's one specific one that I can pinpoint, but I will say that that last one caused me quite a bit of discomfort.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for sharing. Yeah. Thank you. All right, Marrow.
What's up? Yeah. Thank you so much for going first and creating the space and showing your willingness. Gives me a lot of permission to move towards discomfort now that I have experienced your discomfort as a witness. It seems only right that I've moved towards discomfort and allow you to witness me in the same way. Not that there's a, whatever, there's a train of thought there. I'll let that train go. In this self-inquiry work, I was thinking a lot about a situation with my wife. I spent a lot of time before I knew my wife and knowing my wife working around this desire I have to be a parent, to mother. I think some people have that inclination really naturally, and sometimes it's informed by like societal pressures and heteronormativity. And I have done the work to be able to say that I desire a child from a very, like, innate part of me. So my wife and I had started the process of reciprocal IVF, which is a process that allows one partner to use their eggs and another partner to use their womb, so both parents can be involved in the biological hatching of a child, if you will. Feels very scientific, but it's still just like a process of birth. I noticed that I'm sweating already and feeling like the intensity of the weight of this. So I might get a little warbly in my voice, but I trust our sound engineers, and I trust my company to hold that. We started the process of reciprocal IVF, and I was in, you know, a bit of a bad place emotionally, not a bad place. Things were hard. I was in a new city. I'd come from a very sunny climate, and I was now living in a place with the winter again, and that was hard. And I was experiencing a lot of struggles with executive dysfunction. And my wife became aware of this and told me that she wanted to wait until I was more reliable and available as a partner to continue the process of having a child. And there is so much, like, devastation in that, and also relief. And then there's this, like, great shame around all these effort I was putting in, all this effort I was putting in to, like, try and build stability and build a life that would be good for a child. And when the possibility of a child was taken off the table, even just, like, remotely, even just, like, pushed maybe further into the table and harder to reach, I, like, lost my shit. And I couldn't find any motivation to, like, continue stability. And I lost all drive for this effort that I was putting in. Because if there wasn't a child at the end of it, what was the point? Yeah, after that, I sort of spiraled out. I started fantasizing about using alcohol and drugs and escaping my life. And it wasn't until I, like, hatched a plan to leave that I was like, oh, I have fully relapsed in my eating disorder. Yeah. So I think the self-inquiry has a lot of layers of, like, shame being unwanted emotion. And, like, this learning of, well, I don't know where the learning is in this or what I'm drawn to as being this unwanted emotion. I think that pivot point of, like, feeling so much shame and losing what I was holding on to as a reason for stability and wellness, that feels like where the learning is.
All right, so questions from us. So maybe just a clarifying question. So you're saying that the place you came to was that the shame was related to learning that your motivation to kind of become more reliable in your life was almost very much so focused on having a child. That was the main motivation, and that brought up shame for you, that was the central kind of motivator in your life.
Yeah, I think there's shame that I became solely focused on, like, being a partner and a parent, and not on, like, existing for the sake of existence. The external motivation, relying on that, feels shameful. But also the shame of, like, that not being enough. Like, even though I had this external motivator of, like, a partner, a child, that wasn't enough to have executive functioning. That wasn't enough to not have depression. Wasn't enough to make me well.
What would be enough?
where did you and your wife get the idea that you would be someone other than who you are for any reason? I wonder if that's regulating or dysregulating.
I think it's both. You know, it regulates the part of me that wants to be in acceptance. But then the parts of me that, like, don't want to investigate this feel dysregulated by.
I guess I'm wondering, like, is this a pattern behavior for you? So do you tend to shift, like, personality traits or, like, the way that you behave in different group settings based on external stimuli or external motivation? Does this happen often?
Is that a clarifying question? Do you want a response?
No.
What would it mean if you needed external stimuli to be motivating for your functioning in your life?
Yeah, why is that a shameful thing?
What if it just is and it will be for the rest of your life? Or what would it say about you if that was true?
Is perfectionism getting in the way of something you deeply desire? Do you follow where I'm going with that? As in, like, the perfectionism of you needing to be a particular way prior to having a child.
Yeah, I think there's, like, I appreciate the dysregulation of that. And I also think it's important to note that, like, there's so much more pressure as a queer person because I have so much choice and power in when a child comes into my life, and so much more financial strain of that to, like, there's just a different layer of responsibility around it. So I can appreciate the, like, where is this perfectionism coming from? And also have the note of, like, well, there's some, like, logistical realities around being a queer person trying to have a child, which is true to some extent for many people, queer or not, but is the nature of my relationship.
I also was thinking kind of back in the line of the motivation piece. Like, if there is a question of an old story or a way you've identified, like, something related to your identity or how you've identified yourself that needs to be revised. Are you hanging on to something in your identity that's not useful for you?
Are we hitting on anything for you, Meryl?
Yeah, I think I had a big FU reaction to, like, the question around needing external motivation and, like, what do I believe that says about me? And what if I just do? What if needing an external reason for getting up in the morning is just part of my life and part of who I am forever? And that was, that felt very rude, which means there's some meat there, something juicy that I don't want to look at.
Okay, sounds like a good one for you to use in your self-inquiry moving forward. So thank you to Mero and Cosette for taking us into your brave, difficult self-inquiry work today. If you're interested in doing self-inquiry on air with us, submit an application by clicking on the link in the episode description. And if you want a little deeper dive into self-inquiry, go to our self-inquiry overview episode. Thank you to Jackstraw Cultural Center for sound engineering. Thanks to Aaron Davidson for the Appetites original music and to David Bozzi for editing. If you want to learn more about Opal's programming, go to opalfoodandbody.com. Until next time.